until Monday morning strikes again.
Hey, this is Alexander Rossi, Indy 500 champion, and you're on the road with Dane on WGN.
We are the kings of the weekend.
720 WGN, it is Dane Neal here on the road on Saturday, and in studio honored to have Alexander Rossi. He's the defending Indianapolis 500 champion, did it as a rookie racing for Andretti Herta Autosport and for the Verizon IndyCar Series. Alex, welcome to WGN.
Thanks very much. Glad to be here.
Now, I know this is, you know, on the tail end of your tour as champion, but I mean, it goes without saying, it's one of those things, one of those very few things in life that can happen that really changes not only who you are, how you are described, the perception, and not only just for you, people can have life-changing moments, but for everyone else. So for now, in this interview, and of course, as you know, decades from now, as you pass away, people, as they're kind of putting together their thoughts on you, Indy 500 champion will be mentioned. Is that something that I'm sure you've come to terms with now, right? Are you comfortable with that? It's big.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an interesting race in the sense that the aftermath of it, if you win, goes on for a year. And it's been described as the gift that keeps on giving. And there's always something that, whether it's a media-related thing or something that's traditional with the race, there's seemingly every kind of 2 weeks that there's something going on. And it's been an amazing journey for me because I knew so little about IndyCar and the Indianapolis 500 coming into this year that now my understanding of the sport, of the race itself, has taken on a whole new meaning. And as you said, I mean, it doesn't really necessarily change my personal life, but my professional life and the direction my career is going now is definitely been altered since then in a massively positive way.
Yes, absolutely. And it's one of those things that I saw a little bit online where, you know, you're familiar with it, but you don't, you know, especially living overseas, you hadn't necessarily come to terms with exactly what it would mean to be that. It's a select few people that have to actually deal with that. But being a race car driver in general, other than maybe, you know, astronaut, fighter pilot, Iron Chef, is probably about the coolest thing that you can have on your business card. And when you can add Indy 500 champion to it, I think you enter a level of celebrity that transcends even the celebrity that you have in the sport, right? And so when you run into other celebrities, you know, either at the Indy 500 or who were there or just in general life, what's that like? And who's been cool for you to meet as people think it's cool to meet you?
I think the coolest thing for me was I was actually at a dinner in Indianapolis at the beginning of the year, and it was kind of a private dinner, and I got a tap on the shoulder, and I turned around, and it was Jeff Gordon, and he had been in town for one of the trade shows that was going on, and he made an effort to come in to introduce himself to me and to ask about kind of my life and my career and my story and everything, which was, for those 5 minutes, you know, I felt that, you know, the roles were kind of reversed because Jeff, you know, was someone that obviously is a huge icon in motorsports.
Sure.
and is massively successful. And the fact that he was interested in kind of what I had done was a very cool moment for me. And I think that it's one of those things, it's one of those races where there's just a huge amount of respect for it, no matter what form of motorsports you're currently participating in or what you've competed in the past. If you're involved in the 500 and you're, you know, lucky enough to have your face on the BorgWarner Trophy.
Yes.
It's something that's very, very special across all.
It's got to be hard, you know, really to get your head around. And you just made me think of that exact thing. You think of people that have had full careers, you know, full and amazing careers and are icons of the sport, someone like a Jeff Gordon. And then you think of that you have done things that he has not done necessarily, you know, because you have some of the stock car races that have gone back and raced in the open wheel and, you know, and none of them have achieved that. That's got to be a little bit mind blowing too, right?
Yeah, yes and no. I mean, it is because of what you just said. I mean, you're in kind of rarefied air, and you look at the faces that you're next to on this BorgWarner Trophy that I brought up, and you know, there's not a lot of people, and it's you're part of racing history, and that's never going to change. But at the same time, you got to keep doing it, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, I'm the first to say that yes, we won the 170 Indianapolis 500, but now A, we need to do it again,
right?
And B, we need to be competitive for the entire championship, for the entire Verizon IndyCar Series.
For that particular race, it is one of those events, one of those iconic events, just like, you know, the Kentucky Derby or the Super Bowl, you know, things that people who may not even be big fans of that individual sport know that it's one of those either bucket list items to attend or something that's just huge. So when it comes to fans and having raced in Europe, you know, at the highest level, you know, Formula One, what is the difference between the American racing fan or the Indy racing fan as opposed to the fans in Europe?
Well, it's hard to answer that question because I don't really know much about the fan in Europe, because in Formula One and in the European way that motorsports exists, you're very separated from the fans.
Right, gotcha.
And that's something that IndyCar does incredibly well, and it's one of the major positives of the series and the sport, and why it's growing so much, is because the fans can have a direct engagement and affinity with the driver. And it's not just an attachment to a team, a manufacturer, a brand. It's the driver themselves. And being able just to be on a race weekend and spend time with them in an environment where they're allowed and welcome to be there and be a part of our weekend and our environment is very, very cool. And for people that haven't attended the Indianapolis 500 before, it's something that a lot of people don't realize. It's the largest single-day sporting event in the world.
It's insane.
It's impossible to put into words. So if people haven't gone, they really need to check it out.
Well, you talked about the interaction with the fans, that connection with the fans, something maybe unique here in America to motorsports. But in sports in general, you know, I think that you're inspiring a lot of people, whether it's Jeff Gordon to come over and say hello, or young people to get into a career in racing, especially since you've achieved greatness, kind of immortal greatness, early on in your career. Grow up a Patriots fan, right? So that for those kids that out there that love Tom Brady and they want to go out and do that, they can, you know, do peewee football, they can go out for it. In high school and racing, you don't have a lot of those same things. Skip Barber Racing School. But for those like young fans that see you and say, I want to do what you do, what would be your advice for them to get into it?
Well, I think like anything, you gotta find your entry point. For me, it was go-karts. If you're interested in going down the you know, NASCAR sprint car route, you gotta get into legend dirt cars and everything. So it's different for the part of the United States that you're in, I think. But the biggest thing is it's never gonna go according to your plan, right? And learning to accept that's okay, and to make the most of the next opportunity that's gonna come your way. Like, I never thought that I'd be racing an IndyCar in 2016. And initially it was something that was kind of a shock, and I didn't really know what it meant.
Kind of a shock, at least at that exact moment? And we all have those things, in the hindsight is 2020, where you look back and you think, obviously, this was a really great thing to happen. But at the time when it happened, were you like disappointed that one kind of dream had sort of taken a sideways
100%.
Route?
100%. I mean, I spent, you know, my entire career from when I was 10 years old, I was 25 last year, focusing solely on Formula One. And it was what I wanted to achieve. And while I achieved a bit of that, it was scary for me to kind of leave Europe and abandon that and come and start something new. And, you know, it's just the perfect example of, as cliche as this is, when one door closes, another door opens.
Right.
And it was supposed to happen, the merger of Andretti Autosport and Brian Hurd Autosport, to have a fourth car, which they never had before, for me to be that driver, for Brian to be working with me and calling a strategy. I mean, it was all supposed to come together.
Yeah, it works together. And you are, and you just mentioned it, like in good hands. A little bit about that, you know, if you're going to get into a new sport, a new series, to have people like Michael Andretti and that family history and Brian Hurd, that's got to at least make you feel like good about going forward.
Oh, 100%. I mean, if I hadn't been talking to Andretti Autosport, I don't think I would have signed to be in the Verizon IndyCar Series last year. So it was an instant, you know, connection that I felt with Michael, because Michael had gone through kind of what I had done. He is an American, had gone over to Europe, raced in Formula One, came back to IndyCar. He could relate to what I was going through and what I had gone through. And yeah, as you said, to be a rookie and to go into this championship and have the support of Michael Andretti, Mario Andretti, Brian Herta, people who have dominated open wheel racing for decades, and to have them as kind of bosses and leaders and people I can rely on was very special.
Yeah, it had to feel comforting. One of the things I thought was really, really cool is, so you get in here, you understand, you know what the Indy 500 is, but you don't understand like the whole scope of it, the magnitude of what it can mean, and then also those little kind of iconic moments within it that people know, love, and kind of take for granted. You mentioned, so you win, and then you've got, yeah, for those listeners out there, and I don't know who you would be, is when the driver wins the Indy 500. You know, there's that ceremonial bottle of milk. You know, I grew up drinking milk with every meal. Now there's so many other choices out there that people have, you know, whether it's water or sports drinks or things like that. Were you a milk drinker, or were you like, this is something I wouldn't be doing normally? Or were you like, I love some milk?
You know, I don't mind milk. Milk, after you've done a 3-hour physical activity in May in the Midwest, is an odd, you know, recovery drink,
right,
for
right.
Sure. But you don't really care. I mean, you know what the significance of the milk is. You know how special that
like what that
tradition
means,
is, right?
Right?
So you don't care. I mean, I cared 4 hours later when my suit smelled of raw milk and sweat. So that was not great. But in that moment, I mean, you don't really, it doesn't matter. It could be anything. And the fact that you're in Winner's Circle with your team and everyone has a bottle of milk and it's just, you're in that moment that you realize you've accomplished history. It's cool.
In Indianapolis, of course, it's an iconic venue, but you're in the middle of kind of like farm country and culture and that kind of thing. And that's got to be a big part of it. But now, and you mentioned there's so many different things, it wouldn't be the thing you necessarily thought of first, but it is such a huge part. Do you realize or kind of embrace the fact that you're an ambassador for milk? You know, that people are going to drink milk because of you.
Yeah, no, I do now for sure. You know, it was interesting because part of the things, the traditions that you go through as a rookie, you go to this luncheon the week before the race, and it's hosted by the Dairy Association, the Indiana Dairy Association. And out front of this lunch reception is a cow. And they're like, okay, you need to go milk the cow. And I was like, well.
You know, when in Rome, though.
I didn't milk the cow. Right. It just I don't know. I mean, for obvious reasons.
Not comfortable,
right?
For a lot of people.
Yeah. And it is very interesting. It's very specific to Indiana, to the Midwest, to the Indianapolis 500. But yeah, I mean, it's like I said before, it doesn't matter what it is. It's the fact that this is tradition. This has been what's going on for 80, 90 years, and I'm a part of it.
So when it comes to eating, you do mention, what do you eat? And it isn't the way that it used to be, where a lot of the race car drivers were kind of just hard living, you know, maybe, you know, some smoking and some drinking and some whatever that they were doing, depending on the series. Like, what do you do? Because you guys are finely tuned athletes at this point.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people don't realize the physical demands that it takes to drive a race car. You know, we've all heard of G-forces, but 6G in a corner, I mean, is a lot.
Wow.
And that's so much where you can't breathe. So once you're out of that, then you have to recover that. So there's a cardio element. There's no power steering, so the steering is very, very heavy. You're racing for 2 to 3 hours. So it's a big job. From a diet perspective, for me, it's just a lot of common sense. The only weird thing, I guess, that I do is I don't eat chicken. I used to eat chicken like all the time, but then
just got sick of it.
No, I got onto this thing where someone convinced me that it was bad for my blood type, and I just went with it. And I haven't eaten chicken since like November. So I don't know if it makes a difference, but. But that's what I'm doing. So.
More power.
Take it or leave it.
More power to you. On the show, we talk about road trips and family road trips growing up in Nevada City. Did you have, obviously you were into racing at a very young age, but did you have any kind of family road trips that you guys, did you take the truckster, you know, and head off to, you know, the Grand Canyon or something?
So the family road trips we would take, we would go to Lake Havasu. Nice. From Northern California, it was a cool kind of thing we did. But in terms of road trips, it was a very special thing. So when I was 10 years old, my father, his dream was always when he was growing up was to own a Corvette. And he wanted to work hard enough to get to the point where he could have a Corvette. And when he did finally get to that point, he bought it in Florida. Him and I flew out to Florida and we drove it back
nice.
To California. And we stopped at all landmarks and took 2 weeks. And that was amazing. Like, I remember almost every day of that trip. So for road trips, I mean, that's pretty much the ultimate.
A lot of the people that we talk about, even if they're huge celebrities in like film, TV, you know, sports, a lot of times they'll inherit that that family car. Rarely is it a desirable Corvette. Was that your first car because you were racing at a very young age, obviously go-karts and everything?
It was not my first car. My first car was a pickup truck, but
nice.
You know, as we talk about Corvettes and pickup trucks, I gotta mention it's great to drive for Honda and represent Honda and not Corvettes.
Of course.
And pickup trucks. So yep. Go buy a Pilot and a Civic.
That's good advice.
All the Honda things.
Hondas are great cars, always reliable. So as we let you go, let's talk about, we're going to encourage everybody to get down there on the 28th of May and see the Indianapolis 500. People, if you have not experienced it, and I've said it before, racing is, I think, that one true sport that you cannot fully appreciate unless you experience it live. The sights, the sounds, the magnitude, the smells, and all of that stuff. So Alex, you know, as you encourage people to come watch you win your second in a row, is there like a website where people can go to get tickets, information, times, all that?
Yeah, I think the best thing to do is to go to, you know, Indianapolis Motor Speedway, go to that website, go to the Verizon IndyCar Series, and it is truly a very special event. The 100th running went down in history is the greatest ever. The biggest ever, 101st, we're going to do it again, make it even better. So it's going to be pretty special.
And for those fans that want to follow you and all your adventures as you progress through the tracks and through the series, you got some social media you want to share?
Yeah, everything's just at Alexander Rossi, across Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all the things.
Alexander Rossi. He is the defending Indianapolis 500 champion. Going to do it again at the end of May. Thanks for what you're doing, man. Thanks for being on the show today.
Thank you very much. Appreciate it.